And welcome to episode 36 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about campaign and legacy games. Are legacy games going to take over the industry? Should every game have a campaign aspect to it? Probably not to either of those questions, but we'll get into all of that later. But first, a thank you to our patron friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, Shane Poole, and George, and our newest patron, Benjamin Heimowitz. Thank you, Benjamin. If you're interested in supporting us on Patreon or in any other way, visit our webpage, tabletopgametalk.com, and click on the Support Us button in the upper right. All Patreon levels include free auto-entry into all of our contests with bonus entries as well. Now let's go off topic with some news, announcements, and feedback.
Thanks, Josh. Welcome to our first-time listeners. Welcome back to the rest of you. And news. So top of the news list is this is the last week to enter our current giveaway for Santorini and its expansion that comes with it. The deadline is April 30th. So April 30th, 2017. I figure eventually people will listen to us in the future, so we should probably add to that. But midnight your time. Send us your entry. Well, not send us your entry. Go to tabletopgametalk.com and then click on the giveaways button. It'll guide you right through it. If you've entered any of our contests in the past, you will have a special secret link of your own that you can just go and fill in the two pieces, which you'll notice when you get to the website. And if you don't know what that is, but you have entered in the past, you can recover it through the giveaways button as well. So good luck to everybody who entered that. This is going to be a really cool game, I promise. And I've really been meaning to do more YouTube stuff. The last couple of weeks have been a bit crazy with a lot of personal things. I will get back onto that YouTube thing very soon, I promise. Hopefully I can keep that promise. All right, so last week I didn't have any Kickstarter games. This week I have one. I'm trying to stick to my one a week thing. So
you're doing good.
It's a slow withdrawal, but
this you got the shakes yet?
A little bit. I was looking today. I'm like, 22 new games. There's another 30 or so that are ending within the next week. I've only backed like 7 of them. Maybe no. I'm good. I got my one.
Good.
So, Centuri Saga Season 1. So, Centuri Saga is a 4X space game that I have not played. It hasn't gotten the greatest reviews, but it certainly hasn't gotten bad reviews either. And then with the Legacy, the Legacy expansion with it, I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. It's a co-op 4X space game. Now, with Legacy to it, I'm going to have to check this out. So the Kickstarter, you can get the expansion and the original game all for the same price. So I'm like, okay, done. Going to try that out. So it is if you hear this on the Tuesday it drops, I think there's like 2 or 3 days left of the campaign. So if that sounds like you want a Legacy in space game, take a look. I also got a request on how to follow me on Kickstarter. Now, Kickstarter is not the greatest on the whole following thing. The only way you can follow someone is if you're already friends with them on Facebook, and then you can follow them on Kickstarter. So I've added a shortcut link from our website. So you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Kickstarter, and that will take you to my profile, and you will see that I actually really do have a problem, and I'm not just making up the fact that I'm backing all these games. But if you do friend me on Facebook, just give me a heads up, because I tend to ignore people if it's just I don't have any friends in common or something. But I will certainly accept you if you're like, hey, I'm listening to your podcast, friend me so I can follow you on Kickstarter, or just because I want to stalk you on Facebook, that's fine too. I'm not overly active on Facebook anymore, but you know, you can see what I was like 7 years ago. That was fun. And speaking of shortcut links, I do also want to call out the shortcut link to our Board Game Geek podcast page, where all our forums are. So you can do that at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. Let's see, new things. Convention season is upon us. I'm working with Origins and Gen Con to get a live show. I've mentioned that. I actually talked with Origins 2 days ago. So just to clarify what we were trying to do, and they're like, yep, we think that won't be a problem. We'll give you a call if there's any issues. So right now, I think Origins is a go. I don't know what the time slot is, but as soon as I find out, I will. Gen Con is still a little far out, so we won't know until we get closer. And there are two other gaming conventions that I am working with to either get a table at or to kind of like we talk about them, they talk about us kind of thing. And that'll be within the Chicago area. So as that becomes more finalized, I will let you guys know about that too. Both of these are conventions that I go to and really like. So it's going to be awesome if we can get all that set up.
We got some fan disapproval for not being at C2E2 this weekend.
I really wanted to be there.
I know. My sister just got engaged and I had to go wedding dress shopping. So that was a big time sink for my weekend.
Yeah. I was just hungover. So
that makes sense. Yeah. I was at a birthday party yesterday that lasted most of the day. And then today recovering from that. Also, Sunday at C2E2 is not that big of a day to go to.
I'm a little intimidated by C2E2. I feel like I need a native guide to go with the first time. I don't want to jump in all by myself.
The last time I went was 2 or 3 years ago. So C2E2 is a comic book expo this one's particularly in Chicago. And it's held in the McCormick Center, which is one of the largest.
Huge. It's
just a massive convention center. And C2E2 only takes up like one or two rooms of it. But I mean, you could run an auto show. I think they do run the auto show and several other things all at the same time there.
Yeah, I've been to several book conventions there.
Yeah. Everything seems so small in there. It's like, oh, where do we go? It's like a mini city and you have to go to this particular section of it for your convention. But that part is overwhelming. And then the C2E2 part is like, there's just so much comic book and artists and guests and stuff. So it's kind of overwhelming. But I like overwhelming stuff. That's not why I wasn't there. It just didn't fit into my schedule this year. Speaking of things that is going to fit into my schedule this year, though, International Tabletop Day is April 29th, which is a Saturday. And you can go to tabletopday.com and just stick in your zip code and you can find out all kinds of things around you that are doing stuff for International Tabletop Day. For example, in Chicago, the Chicago Public Library is doing something for International Tabletop Day. So you can go there. They'll have people teaching games and stuff.
The big one, the Howard Washington one downtown?
You know something? You'll have to go and put in your zip code to find out.
Okay.
It does look like Harold Washington is doing something.
Oh, yeah, okay. It is. It is Harold Washington Library. Yep.
Nice.
So take the brown line there or the red line or
any of the lines. It's the loop. Yeah. They all go right past it.
There's also Barnes & Noble at Webster, which is right next to the movie theater I really like.
My favorite movie theater in the world.
It's so cushy. The plush seats with like automatic power recliner.
I love the recline thing in there, but I can never get it exactly right. I'm always shifting it like backwards and forwards, like, oh, trying to get it comfortable. But I mean, it is good.
I like that Josh has analysis paralysis in life as well as in board games.
Oh, man.
It's true.
I love you guys.
And of course, the Dice Dojo, which is one of our biggest game stores in the city. It's up at Bryn Mawr on the Red Line stop. They have over 1,500 games that you can just go in and play, like that are open demo games. So I think that's enough for announcements.
All right. So let's go to some feedback about past episodes. If you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com or go to our Board Game Geek forum, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, and become part of the conversation. All right. So this one is from Sam. A thought on the Cult of the New, our last episode. Is part of the obsession with being in the Cult of the New a desire to be an early adopter, kind of like knowing about a band before it becomes big or being in one of the new technologies before everyone else and therefore becoming an expert of sorts. For me, finding a new game and then introducing it to someone else is like passing on a music band or a book that they'd never heard of. There's a sense of pride in knowing that you may have introduced someone to something that they can become passionate about.
Yeah, I have to think that this might be something kind of like the FOMO, fear of missing out. So I have to buy it now just in case it becomes the big thing, especially for Kickstarter. Like, who knows what's going to be big there? But if I get everything, then I'm going to have a couple hits, right?
Yeah, that's totally got to be part of it for you. Like, I can see that. It's like, oh, everyone's talking about Terraforming Mars. I must own it, or Gloomhaven, or whatever it is.
I have been looking deep inside and saying, like, do I really want this game because I want to play it? Mm-hmm. Or do I want it because other people want to play it? And the answer is, might be yes to both, or either one is a yes, I'll still buy it.
I'm like this with books, I know for sure. I love to read, and once I find a book that I like, I want to make everyone I know read it. But I think that's more because if I really enjoy it, I want other people to enjoy it too, so I can talk about it, because I love to talk about things. That's why I'm on not one but two podcasts.
Exactly. Yeah, I think being in the know is a big piece, for sure.
All right, so Sam goes on to talk about how much reboxing / repackaging can make it much easier to travel with games, matching the right games for the right people. And he and Michael talk about how to get into demoing games. This can all be found on the episode 35 thread of Board Game Geek.
Yep. So, Sam, thank you for participating in the competition on Board Game Geek. Yeah, his email is actually quite longer than what we have here, but since it's now out there, everyone can go there and that conversation. I especially like the exchange between him and Michael. So if you have interest in becoming someone who wants to demo games, Michael put a link in that thread so you can check it out.
Nice. Well, we've got another one from Terrence. I'm more a minis player than a board game player, but the question remains, do you master one game or play several? Lately, I've been playing the X-Wing miniatures game, but then there are so many other games that are tempting to play out there. The nice thing is that X-Wing has a strong player base, and it's not hard to get a game in. If I get behind another game, I'm in the position of having to help create that player base. If you want the balance between playing the same game but in a new way every time, look at some of the minis games. Every game is different because there are so many options for each player to create their force. It's not cheap though. When you start, what you start with is about the price of a board game, $50 to $100, and then you add the extra pieces and it adds up quickly.
Yeah. Well, X-Wing alone, I would... Hundreds.
Right.
Hundreds and yeah. hundreds of dollars to stay current, because Fantasy Flight, they do a really great job and say, here's your base set, learn to play. Here's an X-Wing and a TIE fighter, and go ahead and fight each other. Also, we have, you know, these 20 dozen other ships you can buy between $15 and $35 a piece. Have them all.
Right.
And a lot of miniatures games are like that. Like, a lot of tabletop miniatures
hook you in with a few, and then it's like nickel and dime you with these all these other cool miniatures.
Well, look at it, Warhammer 40K. Uh-huh. You know, you get the little army, you buy the miniatures, and then you need to have all your army. And that is not even pre-painted stuff. Most miniatures, actually, I don't think are pre-painted. X-Wing is. Fantasy Flight does a good job at doing that. But if I were to also do with board games what I do with miniature games, I would not have any money at all. I'd be second mortgaging the building. Spencer would be like, you did what? I'm like, what? I needed to feed my habit. And I've done it before. I've done it, like, gone to Gen Con or something, and someone's like, here's my latest new miniature game. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Give me everything you have. And you walk out spending $200. Wow. And then I never have anyone to play it with, because miniature games are very involved, and you can't just say, sit down, let me teach you this. You can do a little bit. X-Wing is a good combination of, it's a miniatures game, but with the base set, it could just be considered a tactical board game. But there's no board, so you're still using kind of measurement tools. That one has its own tools that come with it. But yeah, no, I Terrence, I don't envy your addiction to miniature games.
The only thing I like about miniature games is painting the miniatures.
Yeah.
I have such a addiction to miniature painting. I haven't done it in forever because we haven't been playing a campaign.
Well,
this is all Chris's fault.
I have painted almost all. I have 5 minis left in my Gloomhaven set. And then as soon as they're all painted, I'll put them up on Board Game Geek with little spoiler tags, because I'm painting all the locked characters as well. But so you can take a look at that. And I'll let you know when I'm painting, so you can come down and paint whatever you want.
I know.
You've been working, so as soon as you're not working anymore...
I know. I'm very excited to quit my job.
Yeah. All right, this one... I forgot to put the name on it. I think it's Jaren. I'll look it up in just a second. But he was listening to us this week and mentioned that we could not... All right, hold on. Starting over. I was listening to you guys this week, and you mentioned that you couldn't out yourself as a spy in Resistance or Werewolf in the Werewolf games. I couldn't disagree more. One game of Resistance I played, most players were experienced and I had the typical strategy down. I announced that I was the spy right from the start. Everyone was completely thrown through a loop because either one, I was a suicidal Resistance member not trying to win, not likely, or I was a spy that wasn't trying to win either, also not likely. As the gameplay progressed, I would play in a way that made one or two of the Resistance members look guilty, like they were working with me. It ended up working and the spies won. Now with Werewolf, if you play with the Tanner, outing yourself as a werewolf makes you look like a Tanner because a Tanner benefits from looking guilty. And I agree. So werewolf, the Tanner is a role where you win if you get killed. So in that case, you kind of want to come out as a werewolf. And if you are a werewolf and you come out as a werewolf, everyone's going to think you're the Tanner. So if you're playing Ultimate Werewolf as opposed to just the basic rules, you will definitely have an issue where you're going to be, you have a little bit more strategy that you can take on there.
I think these are more advanced play strategies, perhaps. And for people who really enjoy being right in the midst of the conversation, for people who like to take more of a backseat, these don't sound like a great way to do that.
Yeah, it's a risky strategy. But it's a fun one at the same time.
I was going to say, I'd be interested to see how that plays out. I'm kind of tempted now to try this at least once just to see how it all goes down. So maybe we'll do that one time and I'll report back.
I have done it. Oftentimes you can do it if you want to also maybe throw, you can get thrown under the bus. If you,
right,
so to say, kind of throw yourself like, okay, yes, I'm the werewolf, fine. But you're protecting your other werewolf friend or right. Something along those lines.
Right.
So... I'm finding the name here. I just figured out where it came from. I feel terrible by not knowing this off the top. Jorin, I was right. Jorin. Joran. Jorin.
Nice save, Chris. Nice save.
It's a shame that you can't hear eye rolls. Because there's so much going on at the table for me and Josh.
Well, now I can hear your eye roll. There you go. I was fully prepared for this. all right. I want to interject a quick game highlight before we go on topic because I got too many bones this week. It actually was delivered to work and the box weighs probably 10 to 15 pounds with the expansion. So I carried this all the way home on public transportation and walking about a half a mile to the train from work and a half mile home. It was worth it though.
First world problems.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I spent probably 3 hours watching YouTube videos on how to play this game, then read the instructions, and then played through solo, and I think I have a grasp on it now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a scary game to me.
It is.
And yet, it tagged itself for 12 and up.
Wow. Well,
you've got to be a really dedicated 12-year-old for that one.
Yeah.
I guess there are some out there, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. They've got more free time than we do.
Yeah. Well, it's gotten a lot of... It's rising on the hotness list, mostly because the Kickstarter and the pre-orders have been coming out over the last month or so. And I saw it at Gen Con last year. We took a look at it. This is one of those games where I'm like, all right, it looks so cool. I will drop $150 that I paid for a game that I like demoed for 2 minutes and said, okay, sure, sign me up. So I got everything. Now it's sold out. You can pre-order it now for July delivery, which is another one of those things, getting early in, got lucky with this one. It is really actually quite an interesting game. It's not campaign, it's not legacy, but it's dubbed a dice building RPG. It kind of plays a campaign in itself. And you use each character's very, very unique. And this is what makes it complicated because the basic system is actually pretty straightforward. Roll attack dice, roll defense dice, compare hit points, take damage. There's these poker chips that are on a 4x4 grid. So that's how you do combat. But not everything's combat. So you'll have these different scenario cards. So you could do non-combat or combat. You can kind of choose one of two things in each one. And then the combat... has these mechanics where you have, you know, dexterity, health, attack, and defense, and then you have all the skills, and you have bones. Bones are misses, but if you miss enough times, it actually unlocks other skills and could potentially level you up. So everything you do has some kind of interesting effect. It every character plays has its own rule sheet, so it's like very unique in of itself. And I bought the so the four characters come in the box, and I bought the additional three expansion characters too. So I'm like planning to play seven different characters, or like learn seven different characters. So there's part of that. I showed you guys this. I'm like, before we record, I want to show you this game, just so you know what I'm talking about. And I did not ask you at that time. I'm just like, here it is. What were your initial impressions of this thing?
I really like the components. They were really like good quality art, and even just the quality of the items themselves. Like almost every card and the player mats were like plastic. Yep. So, you know, like you were saying before, if you spill anything, it's fine. And had nice neoprene mats with holes cut out for your character to level up and things. So it looked really cool.
I'm tired and grumpy. So I'm just going to be tired and grumpy about everything. And I know that about myself. I'll give it a chance another day.
I mean, I was intimidated as well. Like, I was definitely like, you mean you said it yourself. You were like, this could be your nemesis game. And I was like, oh, there's lots of choices, isn't there? And yeah. You were like, yeah. And I might even have to give you some homework before you have to play it. And inside, I was just like, oh, no.
Well, I think the fact of calling it a role-playing game is pretty good, because with a role-playing game, you need to learn your character. Right. So at the very least, you're going to read the pages around the character you're building. This has that same thing. I could not sit a group down and in a reasonable amount of time teach them how to play that character in an effective way. I might be able to say, okay, let's play through a short campaign so you get the use of the mechanics, and then take your character sheet home, read it over, watch the YouTube video. And then when we play it again, we can play a longer game and you'll get more enjoyment out of it. But it is an investment. But if you like that, and I actually do, I enjoyed all of the research I did on this game once it came, it might be your kind of game. Like, there's no legacy or campaign aspect to it whatsoever, but you can play this game from a one-hour solo game to a six-hour multi-tyrant campaign in a single setting or a single sitting game.
Where you get to take on three baddies.
Three baddies. Yeah, they call it the little bad guys are baddies. I like it. There's a lot of humor in the box. Like the storyline, there's a campaign, well, a world storybook that you can download for free from the site. And it just talks about these Gearlocks, yeah. Which is this race that are like, they've been hiding out for quite a while. And now this is a story about them coming out and defeating these like tyrants in the world, and they have to fight a bunch of baddies on the way.
They kind of look a bit like house elves from Harry Potter, or whatever they're called.
A little house elfy.
They look kind of goblin, gremlin-y.
True. Well, you're like a mini one.
Well, you're actually looking at a goblin.
Yeah.
So, yes.
That looks like a goblin, all right.
So, depending on the angle you're looking at, Josh and I are looking at the side of the box that have the gear locks on it, and Kitty's looking at the one with the goblin. So,
yep. That makes sense.
That's pretty fair. All right. Enough of that. Let's talk about other stuff.
In this episode, we're talking about campaign and legacy games.
All right. So that is...
There's also a question mark after that sentence, as if to say, maybe I'll put some more content in here, but it just never happened.
I think you're supposed to read that, talking about campaign and legacy games.
Oh, yes. That's right.
That could have been it too. We have a number of subjects and topics to talk about.
We do.
You people.
We're tired.
I asked Josh, did you read over all the segues and intros? I was like, yep. Any issues? Nope. All right.
Yeah. So
Josh approved it.
I did.
This is on all of us.
Signed off.
So I really want to cover, we've been talking a lot about things like Gloomhaven, Pandemic Legacy, really just kind of those kind of games that continue on. And last week, you know, when we're Cult of the New versus the Old, this kind of came up in a little bit too. It's like, are these games, you know, kind of do they help Cult of the New people actually stick with a game for a little longer? And I want to start this off by reading a comment up from Michael on the Board Game Geek thread. So he says, personally, I can't bring myself to destroy something I paid money for, especially a board game, so legacy games have been out for me. Campaign-style games are something I do get interested in occasionally, though. When Descent 2.0 got their app, I wanted to pick it up and try it out, but haven't yet. Also, Gloomhaven is a bit out of my price range for investing in one shot at the moment. And then Steve mentions, legacy games are the embodiment of cult of the new. So, and he goes on to say, because he doesn't mean that in a bad way, but people that like playing new games or the cult of the new like a new challenge, trying different mechanisms or combination of mechanisms, and legacy games does that once again with one game. So I agree with both of these things. If you're the type of person that just wants to play this game, same game over and over, a legacy game may not be the one for you because it is finite. A campaign game, potentially, though, because you can reset that campaign. Michael, I will say Gloomhaven is an incredibly resettable game. There's nothing in Gloomhaven that you have to do that would make it not resettable. It is difficult to play multiple campaigns at once, but a single campaign you can play through and then reset. So what do you guys think? Like, what defines a legacy game to you? And this is a trick question, but I want to know, what, from your point of view, what is a legacy game?
Yeah, I feel like I've only really played Pandemic Legacy as a legacy game. I mean, I've played Arcadia Quest as well, which is more of a campaign style thing, because you don't destroy pieces, you just reset. But to me, legacy does have that element of the Pandemic Legacy has, where you kind of rip up cards, you stick things over the essentially something you can't play again. And I'm assuming that that's the differentiator that makes something legacy. I could be wrong.
Well, there's two things. I think legacy is like a trademarked branded thing.
I'm not clear if it's trademark or not, but it's definitely only been on three specific games that I know of, all designed by the same person.
But what it means to me is each game playthrough affects the next game playthrough, and it moves forward, and the changes are permanent, and you can't go backwards.
I like that.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, and I think you both are hitting on, you know, destructive nature. If you destroy something, obviously you can't go back.
But you also build.
And building, yep.
There are new things that come out.
Right.
As much as you destroy old things.
Yep. The game in some way is different.
Yeah.
So when you play it the next time, you're not playing with the same board. You're playing with a new board that was created from your last playthrough.
Well, and new rules as well. I mean, you know, that's
potentially, part of, yep.
Yeah. I mean, especially when we were playing Pandemic Legacy. I mean, I
remember,
won't spoil
no spoilers.
Anything. I know. I won't spoil anything. But, you know, the rules would change from round to round. And it, you know, really challenges you to come up with new ways and new strategies to try and beat this new thing that you're encountered with. You're like, okay, this isn't this, it's the same core game, but it's different. Like, we have to do different things to win this round than we did in the previous rounds. And I really like that, especially with the co-op aspect as well, because it made it easier to face those new challenges, because there was a whole group of you kind of tackling it at the same time.
Yep.
I will remind you, we also did play one game of Risk Legacy.
Yeah, we actually played one. We played a couple games of Risk Legacy.
I think we played two games back to back. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure we played two.
I thought it was one as well.
I think we just played one.
Well, there is a logbook of it.
Yeah.
So I could go look it up.
But I will say I did not enjoy it as much as I did Pandemic Legacy. And I don't know if that was the actual gameplay or if that was because it works so much better for a co-op game.
Yeah. Well, I think that for Risk Legacy, at least, there was a couple things going against it, with you two especially.
I was about to say.
You like the way classic Risk plays.
Yeah.
And the Risk Legacy version added another victory condition. So you could still win it the old way, but another victory condition of you get a certain number of points and the game ends. And that was done intentionally to make shorter games so you could cycle through. Risk Legacy was the first of the legacy concept, where you were actually writing on the board, putting stickers on, that kind of thing. So it was like just kind of the launching of this idea. So I don't think it was as like story driven.
Yeah, it was. Well, I think it's hard to make it story driven because it is against each other. It's hard to trying so hard not to spoil things.
Well, with Risk Legacy, I think you're okay. Number one, I don't know that you could spoil that much.
No, I'm trying not to compare it to something in Pandemic Legacy that would be a huge spoiler for Pandemic Legacy. There's nothing that the board does that changes the game that isn't driven by the players.
Yeah.
From what I recall, all of the additions to the board were based on what happened during the game. And maybe it's just that we didn't play enough, but I felt like there weren't enough catch-up mechanics.
Yeah.
If you were losing the first few rounds, that the people who won had big advantages of the placement of new things on the board.
Yep. And I think you hit something there that is very different between... So Pandemic Legacy has the story deck. It every time you start a game, you're going to read a new card that kind of advances you. With Risk Legacy, you didn't have that. There's just, okay, play the game, here's the game, and what you do will affect the next game, but there isn't something that's going to happen regardless of what you end up doing. So you're kind of playing this really long game of Risk, and in the end, you'll kind of compare to see who won.
Well, my point was going to be actually that me and Kitty really like to win.
Yes.
So I didn't know if that might have colored your perception as well, because I think Chris won that game.
Yeah.
And I was a bit like, oh, man. And I felt out of it very quickly. And I only played it once. So I would like to revisit at some point and give it another go, just to see, you know, if I enjoyed it more when I won.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's a game where, like I say, it's still Risk at heart.
Yeah.
Like, there's not that much difference as to Risk besides the fact that you have headquarters and that you can take over X number of headquarters will win you the game, or other things you can do that will win you the game. But so Risk came first, then Pandemic, then Seafall. Now, Seafall I have not played. I've tried many times to try to get into the game. The reviews of it aren't entirely stellar. I do have a friend who played through the entire game. And at a certain point, I think they were playing through it because it was the same group meeting up all the time and just playing through. There is a story there. There are titles there. But it's still a competitive game. So it's not
It's not co-op.
It's not co-op.
Right.
So you're kind of exploring this world, but you're exploring this world in a competitive way. And depending on how you rank in one game will change your status in the next game. But again, it has the same thing that Risk Legacy suffers from, where you don't feel like you're revealing the story together, even though there is a story that gets revealed. I don't know. I haven't heard great things, but I'm not going to speak too much of it beyond just the fact that these are the things I've heard about.
Well, why not? That's interesting to me, because that was like a super hyped game. Like people at, which con was it?
The big Gen Con.
Yeah, Gen Con. Were just like running. It was like Black Friday. They're like elbowing each other out of the way. And it was like sold out instantly. Yeah.
Well, two reasons. One, there were only 100 copies at the convention.
Okay, that so had 60,000 people. That's why they wanted it. Right.
And two, and probably the biggest, it was the successor to Pandemic Legacy.
Oh.
So same designer, legacy game.
Okay.
And this was the next legacy game
in
the
line. Now I can see it, right.
So that's what caused that huge, like really super, super hype. So I don't think any game could have really lived up to that hype.
Yeah, Pandemic Legacy is so good. I can see why. Yeah, the excitement.
I'm a little concerned that season two of Pandemic Legacy even isn't going to be able to live up to season one. It was one of the most fun experiences I've ever had playing a board game.
Me too, yeah.
And I have played a lot of board games now.
Yeah.
I would no longer put myself in the casual gamer category. I said something the other day where I was like, oh, you know, I still consider myself a casual gamer. And then I think Chris was just like, well, you know what all of these words mean? You've played all these different types of games, and kind of was like, you get to upgrade now.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what happens is as you play more and more games, you start to become a little bit more analytical about what you like or don't like about the game, which is actually one of the reasons that I started this podcast is I wanted to talk about the things that were cool in games and why, you know, and bringing on different levels of experiences is important because the way I see something and approach it is different. So, Josh, you played Pandemic Legacy with us all the entire time too.
Yeah,
that's grammar. And what was your take on that versus other games you've played
versus just other normal board games? I mean, there was something special about it. It was the fact there were so many different things, but I loved the fact that we were all tackling it together. I think being a co-op game really helped, but you know, as things changed, we were having to kind of evolve with that challenge. And as new, you know, problems or hurdles came out, we were all collectively chipping in our two cents as to, oh, I think we should tackle it this way. Oh, but we haven't thought about this way. And it was really nice to see us all kind of bond and come together and like offer different parts of opinions for things, and everyone, you know, chipped in, and it was this real like cohesive unit, I felt, and I just loved that.
I think leading into our next kind of thing is that Pandemic Legacy is a campaign.
Well, and that's the next question, is what's the difference between a campaign and a legacy? But I do have one follow-up for Josh. We played 19 games of Pandemic Legacy. Would you have had as good a time if we just played 19 games of Pandemic over a six-month period?
Definitely not. Definitely not. And that's why I was, you know, Michael's thing saying, oh, I can't bring myself to destroy stuff. Like, you have to give Pandemic Legacy a go, Michael. You really do. Like, it's so, so insanely good. It really is. Yeah. And I was just blown away.
It's the fact that you're destroying things. It's the fact that you're making those changes permanent that makes that game so engrossing.
And you just don't know what's coming. It's like discovery as well. It's like, we're going to open up this new envelope and, oh my goodness, something in the story's changed and this has happened now. It was mind-blowing, you know. It's so exciting and thrilling to do that.
You just embrace it and go with it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do the segue. Legacy game versus a campaign game. So I'm going to ask the same question. What is a campaign game?
I want to hear from you, Chris.
I don't want to answer
the
questions.
I mean, to me, a campaign game is similar to a legacy game in that things are changing and progressing and you're kind of carrying over stuff that you had before from your previous rounds. So you might play the same game a few different times with some changes and bring along things that had happened before, but you can just reset the whole game. Nothing's destroyed. Nothing's permanently lost or permanently changed. You can always just wipe it clean and start again. That's my idea of a campaign.
So I think that a legacy game can do that as well.
Okay.
Where you could potentially reset it. It just depends on what you do. Imagine that we didn't rip up any of the cards and we just set them aside. In theory, you could bring them back. Now, Legacy, you couldn't do that with, because there are so many different stickers. And once the stickers are out there, to peel those off would be a pain. But a game that didn't have as much like writing on things and stickers and stuff could be considered changed. Like the game changes when you go to another one. But it could be resettable. Gloomhaven is a good example of this. I am still torn as to whether or not Gloomhaven is a legacy or a campaign game. Because if you play with a campaign tracker sheet, just like a sheet you print out and you just track out which scenarios are unlocked, what your prosperity is, what your group's doing, you could reset that game simply by shuffling all the cards back into their appropriate decks. There's nothing else you have to do. Because the only board that has stickers, the board has the stickers on it, but the board isn't used for gameplay at all. It's just used to track your progress. So you don't have to, the game doesn't change from scenario to scenario. The scenarios set up a different like environment, a different goal, but the game is essentially the same thing. I'm going to put a little asterisk about character development, but we'll talk about that as a separate thing. Pandemic Legacy is definitely going to be non-resettable.
Yes.
So I don't know if not being able to reset is the legacy, or is it that the game is actually has changing rules as you play is a legacy-ish thing.
I'm wondering if there's an element here about the story. I don't know if legacy and campaigns have to have a story, but the ones I've played seem to have some sort of story that you can reveal and evolves as you go forward, and kind of like reading a book. You know, once you finish that story, you know, there's an element, well, I know what's coming now. So maybe that's the kind of legacy.
I think they both they both have a story, but like we're talking with Risk Legacy, there's not much of a story
that's
there.
True, yeah.
So I think maybe it's a Venn diagram that there's legacy games and there's campaign games, and Pandemic Legacy is in the middle as a legacy campaign game.
I would say that Pandemic Legacy is the quintessential legacy, and Gloomhaven is in the middle, because you cannot possibly reset Pandemic.
But if I'm defining a campaign game, it's a co-op game. You are working together to beat a scenario usually. Sometimes the scenario is run by the board or a deck. Sometimes the scenario is run by another player.
Okay.
But it is essentially co-op or one versus many.
Sure.
Most, yep. I think, are...
I can't think of any off the top of my head that... Well, Arcadia Quest is not, but it is... Let's go with what you're thinking, because generally you're mostly right, yes.
So a campaign game, it's a group working together to complete a series of quests. And if you reach a certain win condition or level, something, you win.
Right.
So I think Pandemic meets all of those. You're working together. You're trying to meet these goals. But it's also a legacy game. You're changing the rules as you go. That's the legacy part. And the campaign part is the working together towards a goal part.
I think what I'm hearing out of this is campaign games are a subset of legacy games. A legacy game is always a campaign because you're always going to be continuing from one to another.
Oh, I guess.
But a legacy game has other components that are a little bit more destructive, potentially, and also change how the game plays from session to session, where a campaign game has less of that, but still has that same story progression.
Yeah, I feel like rules aren't changing constantly in campaign games.
Yeah.
Like, you're not permanently changing the rules of the game.
I don't know, maybe I need to play more competitive legacy games, but I feel like they don't have the same feel as a campaign game. They don't have the same, we're moving the story forward together. It's more, we are playing a game and the rules change based on what we do. And that's just legacy without campaign.
Let's talk about Arcadia Quest, because Arcadia Quest, Kitty hasn't played it.
I have not.
But Josh and I played through like a full campaign in a Saturday. We played for like 13 hours straight. And it was, I think, six or seven.
Something
like that. Back-to-back scenarios. This is a competitive campaign game. Yep. And the way this works is, you have up to four players, and the players are trying to run into this town, get something, beat the bad guys, and then get out.
They're dungeons, but yeah.
Yeah, they're dungeons.
Yeah.
Well, it's a town.
Oh,
Arcadia is the town.
Oh.
So you're going in, trying to beat off the orcs and bad guys.
They always look like dungeons to me. Okay.
grab the particular, whatever the mission is. You might be saving someone or whatever. But you're competitive, although it's kind of like a friendly rivalry.
Yeah.
So as you complete this, if you completed it, you'll get a benefit. You'll move on with your benefit. If you didn't complete it, you get something, but maybe not as cool. You didn't get the artifact or whatever
it's
the
like
case
two
is.
It's like two heroes have just run into some dungeon and they want to be the first one to the treasure.
Exactly.
So they will fire their arrows at each other and kind of mess each other up. But ultimately, they're aiming at some other goal. They just want to kind of stop the other person for a bit.
So it's kind of this competitive, but the storyline progresses and it gets harder and harder and you get new things that you have to do, and you're still kind of this friendly rivalry. Friendly is in, I'm going to shoot you in the face with my arrow.
Oh, yeah.
But still, you know.
I was thinking a lot about your characters, and every time you kept getting new, you know, swords and equipment, I was like, oh, no, you know, how am I going to take on that character now? He's just, like, overpowered. Oh. So it was definitely, it wasn't like, oh, yeah, he's kind of in the dungeon too. It was like, oh, I have to worry about this guy.
Yeah.
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 See, that seems like an exception to campaign game though.
So this is what I define as campaign game. So the thing I put the pin in, to me, a campaign game is when the characters you're playing change, but the game itself does not.
So, which Pandemic meets.
No, because the game itself is changing.
I guess. Well, that's the legacy aspect.
Right. So in a campaign game, for Arcadia Quest, for example, you're building up, you have three characters you're playing, and you're getting equipment for them, you're giving them little power-ups, they are getting stronger as you play, and that particular piece is carrying through. You're playing additional scenarios, and those scenarios get more difficult, but the game itself isn't changing. The rules are still the same, the setup of the game is just different from scenario to scenario. That is how I see a campaign game. It's one of those things where we're playing the same game, but I still get to carry over some stuff. Pathfinder collectible card game or Pathfinder adventure card game is a campaign game because you are building up your character. Your character is changing from one scenario to the next. You're playing different scenarios, but that character is the only thing that's truly being carried from one scenario to the next one. So that's where I think is at least a fundamental piece of campaign games. If you don't have that character carryover, then you're not playing a campaign game. You're just playing the same game over and over with a different setup each time. Maybe?
I can see that. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was I really enjoyed the between each round, like powering up my character. Like it was that feeling when I played video game RPGs where I went to a new town And I had enough money that I could like buy this super cool armor, this super cool sword. And I was just couldn't wait to get back out there and try them out. And I was like, oh man, my character is so awesome now. And it really had that feel to it. So I kind of enjoyed, you know, one of the things about campaigns is just that feeling of like my avatar is just getting better and better.
The in-between game leveling up.
Oh yeah. It was so good.
Which Pandemic Legacy has.
Yes, again, that's what I'm saying is.
It's really on the border. I think like Gloomhaven and Pandemic Legacy, like both have a toe in each world a bit.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying is I think campaign games are a subset of legacy games. They have everything that Pandemic Legacy has. For the most part, whether it's competitive or co-op, doesn't matter. You have character progression, there's changes, there's things that are carrying over, there's in-between game decisions you need to make. But they also have the added layer of changing the game you're playing the next time you play. So that's where I'm thinking that that's the difference between campaign and legacy.
Well, I think with most campaigns, you're doing a different scenario each time, so it feels like the game has changed each time. Most scenarios have a different setup. With each one, you don't play through the same thing over and over again.
Yes. And you could say, like in Pandemic Legacy, the scenario is changing. So your goals are different and your setup is a little bit different as you're playing through. But I still think because the cities can be damaged and because what happens, like the damage level of those cities, change the scenario in unpredictable ways, right? Like that part is carrying over as well. So honestly, I truly believe it's just kind of like a splitting hair thing between what you call a legacy and a campaign. And that's why Gloomhaven's this weird gray area where is it legacy? Is it campaign? A lot of people don't want it to be called a legacy game because legacy implies that you can only play it once.
No replayability. Right. Exactly.
And when even Isaac out there, he did not call this game, nowhere in the rules, nowhere in his marketing stuff does he call it a legacy game. He started referring to it as a legacy game when the community did. But it was like, well, the community is using the term, so I'll use it. But it's really not. Like, you could it's play this game again.
Legacy-esque.
Yes.
It has. But you're not destroying things. You're not. There's nothing you can't undo.
Right. You can. Like, the symbol for removing a card is the tear-up symbol.
Right.
No, I've never heard of anyone actually doing that, though. Right. Everyone just has a little plastic bag that they put the removed cards in. And that's it.
Pandemic, there's no point to not tearing it up because you can't put
you're
it back
committed.
In. It's done. You have to move forward with how things happen.
Yeah.
If you're not, it's disingenuous. You're cheating.
Well, I mean, and because you're using the stickers, there's really... You'd only be halfway able to reset the game.
You can't. You cannot reset the game. So at that point, that's what makes it different for me is that a legacy game cannot be reset, whereas a campaign game can have some of these legacy aspects to it, but it can be reset.
Yep.
I think if you really, really, really tried hard, you could reset Pandemic Legacy, but it would involve you getting your own components.
You could. What you would do is you would go to Amazon.com and search Pandemic Legacy and click the Buy Now button and then boom, reset.
No, because I'm talking about like, you know, those frugal people out there who want to play it with one group and then play it with a different group. And I suppose you could use other things that weren't stickers that could stay
on
the board.
It would involve like razor blades in multiple...
So, but
printing your own.
But you do bring up a good point because Gloomhaven, they have stickers.
Yeah.
And there is a company out there that sells the same exact sticker sheets, but they're removable stickers.
Yeah.
So you can put the sticker on there and then remove it. And because the stickers have such a minor impact on the game, it's completely valid. In fact, the only time that stickers matter in Gloomhaven is when you put them on the character cards. And that's the only place where removing them would be useful to reset because you can use a campaign tracker for everything else. That's the only piece that there's stickers actually there. And if you really wanted to, you could put it on the sleeve as opposed to the card, and then you reset it by just switching sleeves.
Right.
So
smart move.
Yes. Now, so we talked about resetting games and tracking and all of that. Playing with multiple groups. This is another, I think, defining factor. I wasn't trying to discuss the differences between legacy and campaign, more of like the differences between legacy and campaign games to normal games.
Right.
But this is a more interesting conversation, so we see where it goes. But multiple groups. this is a kind of a fundamental thing. So Arcadia Quest, fairly simple to play with multiple groups there. There's a few cards that are going to be removed for particular characters, but those characters are easy to track. And there's actually sheets you can write down, so you can just kind of throw all the cards back in the deck and you're just marking it and tracking it that way. Pandemic Legacy, impossible. You can't play multiple groups with that.
No.
You would have to do the what I suggested before, which is have all these other pieces or other tokens.
Yeah, get the blue box and the red box. That's why there's actually two colors there.
I think you could do, like, if you have three people who play every game, you could bring someone in.
You can have
a different person,
people.
But you can't have a completely different group.
Yeah,
you can have some different players.
Yep.
But you cannot play it concurrently.
Yes.
And I think with something that has such a strong storyline, would you even want to? I mean, for me, I would be like, well, I kind of know what's going to happen now. I know what story's coming out. It's kind of lost that unique, fun thing for me.
You've never played a video game again, even though you knew the story?
Maybe.
There's a part of me
that really wants to.
I want to go buy my own copy and like try to maximize. Play it on the hard level, be the expert, get the high score.
And Kitty was talking about her dad two weeks ago when we talked about video games, how he'll play several times through.
Yeah.
It's not an uncommon thing to say, I want to play this again.
That's true.
Even if I know the story.
Yeah.
And there's also not uncommon to say, there's a lot of comments of like, I have Gloomhaven, but I want to play with this group and this group. And in this group, I'm going to go the evil path. In this group, I'm going to go the good path. So I'm experiencing both storylines at the same time, right, but in different groups. So, but in Gloomhaven, it is possible, but cumbersome to play multiple groups because you have to reset the characters each time and make sure that the right cards are out for that particular character. So it's just really fiddly to switch characters. And on top of that, you have basically combat modifier decks. You have four of them. So if you had two groups of three, you really want to have six of them because they get modified with your character. And so,
but couldn't you just bring in, because I thought Gloomhaven had this mechanic where you could just bring new people in all the time.
So that's different.
Right.
And both of these games, you can swap players, but you're still playing in the same world on the same storyline.
Yeah.
You can swap characters and players.
Yep.
Even.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So, but you could, what I'm saying is you could bring them into your existing campaign. Even if you had another group, they could come and... But then I suppose you'd be unlocking things and you'd be hearing stories and the other group wouldn't hear.
Exactly. Yeah. So playing two at one time is actually relatively cumbersome in most campaign and especially legacy games. Right. Very cumbersome to play the same game with two different groups.
Right.
It really
Unless you have two copies of the game.
Yeah. It really is why Pandemic came out with a red box and a blue box. So you could buy both copies and say, okay, this is the red box group and this is the blue box group. Other reason. They're identical games.
You could, I think you could play Arcadia Quest like that. You could have different.
I think Arcadia Quest is much easier because you're not changing a lot of the characters as you're going from scenario to scenario. So, and I should say, people are probably saying, why haven't they mentioned Descent yet? I own Descent. I was not huge into, or didn't have a board game group at the time when Descent was big. So I have not yet played Descent. The number of comments I've seen where you can play it solo with the app and it runs the game for you, I'm definitely going to do that. It's the same thing I was talking about last week where Cry Havoc was on my list of games and then other games keep pushing it on the background. So Descent may be an exception. Descent gets oftentimes compared with Gloomhaven. It's like, if I have Descent and I love it, why would I get Gloomhaven? They're different experiences, that I know for sure. But that's why I'm not talking about Descent. Let's see if we have any more feedback here. Actually, Steve continues. Let's see. Other gamers like role-playing the same game, fully exploring its puzzles and seeing all of the little nuances of a single game, mastering it. Strangely, legacy games have that too. There is a constant base with a wide field of variety to play it, giving even more material to explore. So from that perspective, I can see why legacy games are so popular. They are also a good way to ease people into trying more different types of games. With this, they appeal to more types of gamers, as well as have fun aspects like game personalization that help make it a type of game a specific player wants to play. But if the base consent that is varied off of its very good... I'm reading it as... I copied and pasted this.
Okay.
If it's not very good, then you're not going to be adding, the legacy aspect isn't going to be adding anything to it. Right. I think that kind of refers to maybe Seafall, where it's not the greatest game in general, and the legacy aspect doesn't make it better. It just means I have to play this okay game a lot more times to really explore the whole story.
Oh, that's such a shame. Everyone had such high hopes for that game.
It's true. It's true. I'm still using the coins. I'm using the pre-order coins I got from Seafall as my, from one game to the next game, currency in
Gloomhaven.
Yeah. By the way, did we decide what our next show topic was going to be?
I think we did.
Are we? Okay. I'll just check in. Because Josh, you might have to make that up as we go. I bring that up because our next week we're going to be talking about tricking out your game.
Oh, you did. Okay.
There. sometimes we decide these things in real time. We were talking before the show. We had a number of different show topics, and Sam actually gave a great topic suggestion as well, and it's on our list, Sam. He should just be an honorary co-host at this point.
He's given us a lot of material.
He really has. So anything else that we didn't cover, campaign versus legacy? I know that I love them.
Yeah, just go out and play Pandemic Legacy. It's probably the best board game ever played, so...
That and Gloomhaven, I will follow up with. I'm having just as much fun with it. I don't play it with you guys. I play it with a different group. I apologize. I'm cheating on you, but I look forward every week we play, and I look forward to it. We spend like 5 hours either on Wednesdays or Fridays playing two scenarios, and just have a blast every week.
I feel like we should maybe come and like play a one-off character in the campaign with them.
Yeah,
just to. Yeah. Get more of an experience with it, because like you said, you can't play two campaigns at the same time, at least not very easily. So I feel like we need more experience with it, but we're not going to go out and, you know, we can't right now even get a new copy for a while.
I've ordered two. They're not going to come till July, August area. and no, we'd be more than happy to have you guys come and join us.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Well, you have to invite us, Chris.
I hereby
when it's a different group. You have to let us know when it's happening.
All right, but you also have to be here for the entire duration because we play from 6 to midnight.
That's fine.
So, and sometimes it's on a school night.
At least not until June 9th.
All right, June 9th, you can join us.
Yeah, and I can join you whenever because I'm hardcore.
Done.
I get too sleepy.
Well, if you guys think that we missed something, something that you want to have input on campaign versus legacy, the Board Game Geek thread on this one is relatively light. That's my fault because I didn't actually add it until a couple days ago. But add your comments and conversations there. Again, tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. We'll take you right there. You'll have to scroll down and actually click on the episode thread, but it's there, I promise. And otherwise, I think we've damaged that topic about as much as we could. I'm looking forward to next week, and I really need your guys' input on next week. So I'm going to put the thread up even before you hear this. I'm putting it up tonight, so it's 2 days before the episode drops. So give us input on that topic. All right, Josh.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for listening. Have you started the music already? And remember, we love your feedback, so consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. And visit us at the site, tabletopgametalk.com, to learn more about becoming part of the conversation. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, Shane Paul, George, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Lucas Hartso, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean Kelly, and all the rest. If you'd like to support us via Patreon, you can find out more at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Until next week, when we talk about tricking out your game, keep playing games, and having fun.
Good night.